The committee will come to order. If any member happens to wander in, would they please take their seat? Looking around the room, I don't think a quorum is present. We'll have
but
to.
But I'm really interested, Mr. Chair.
I know. Thank you very much. Representative Murphy is very interested. Hopefully we'll have a quorum. I mean, we're not taking any votes. There's no action in that way today. But I do feel this is an important informational hearing or panel that we are going to have dealing with administrative costs, because this is an issue that has been coming before us quite a bit as to how to deal with it. We are interested in the concerns, the problems in dealing with it, or successes. So my intent is to have the panel before us, and they can basically freely discuss as a panel. If some moderation is needed, I will serve in that capacity. It's going to be a little bit looser than a normal committee meeting, and especially being the fact that at this present time it's Representative Murphy and I. If the staff would care to ask questions as well of the panelists, you'll be welcome in doing that. In fact, it'd be appreciated if you did that. So, at this time then, would these folks please take a seat? Sue Jens of the State Arts Board, David O'Fallon from Meeker County, Minnesota Humanities Center, Bill Straczynski, Public Television, and Jim Noble's Office of the Legislative Auditor. Thank you. Would you welcome to the committee, and would you please all identify yourselves for the record?
David O'Fallon, Minnesota Humanities Center.
Mr. Chair, I'm Sue Jens. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota State Arts Board.
I'm Mr. Chair, Bill Straczynski, and I represent Minnesota Public Television System.
Mr. Chairman and members and staff, Jim Nobles, Legislative Auditor.
Okay, thank you, and perhaps maybe just go back in order again and give your perceptions about the issue of administrative cost.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and member. I think it is, I'll be very brief because I think my colleagues have quite a bit to add to this too, but the fundamental perception is quite simple, that the 2.5% ceiling on the administration costs, you'll see a very brief handout in front of you on the table. The top page of that gives the total legacy to the center. And what's important to notice on that is how much of that is basically passed through money. And the instruction from the legislature was that we are the fiscally responsible center, so we do track every single dime and dollar as it is spent by our colleagues in the legacy partners, as we call them, Indian Affairs and Black Americans and Chicano Latino Council and the Asian Pacific Council. So that literally every transaction is a transaction that is vetted, recorded, signed off on by us. And in some cases, we are the fiscal agent for the civic partnership, which you can see in the column on the right-hand side on that front page. And even though it is basically a pass-through, we don't control the programming, we are the fiscal agent, so we do, in fact, monitor and play that, if you will, responsible role. So our current working estimate of this is that it's costing us about $47,000 more biennium to do this than the 2.5% allows us to do. And that's simply staff time to monitor bills, to pay bills, to look at contracts, to review transactions, and to be the responsible party. You'll see on that second page that the 2.5% of the 2.1 million gives you, you know, $52,500. And then there's our pretty good on-the-ground estimate of the staff time and actual work involved to be responsible, keep track of the money, file the reports, et cetera, et cetera. So the 47.5 that is the difference, and I'm sure this will be a common story among my colleagues and myself, 47.5 we're basically using other funds to cover real expenses in order to be responsible. So that limits in some ways other programming or innovation that we could possibly pick up. So that's the broad strokes, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Fallon, for further clarification, the 47,000 above the 2.5% then comes out of the humanities?
Yes, that's coming out of whatever other funding we are able to have from the National Endowment or from other sources, yes. Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy.
And that's just for the legacy part of those four councils?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, this is exactly that. It is to monitor the expenses that we were told to be responsible for, the transactions over the biennium of all the legacy funding that passes through us, yes.
Okay. Mr. Fallon, during the process and when you found out that you were having to find the extra 47,000 through the Humanities Center, other expenses or through your other monies that were coming into the Humanities Center, did you approach the Department of Administration at all, or the Budget and Management?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, since I've been on board in November, we haven't done that, but the person here who is more knowledgeable about that, our CFO, COO, and my right hand, Kathy Mickelson, is here. She might know the answer to that, if I could turn to her for a moment.
I would like to hear from Ms. Mickelson, because
Ms. Mickelson.
Mr. Chair, as a former chair, I did not know of this problem.
Yeah, that's why we're doing this, to learn these things.
It was not brought to my attention.
I will say to the...
And I know that as a conferee on the bill in 2009 and 2010, it wasn't our intent that the money should come from the Humanity Center funding or appropriations.
Good afternoon.
Ms. Nicholson, as we do have some others joining us now, the issue being brought up is that the Humanities Council has spent $47,000 more than the 2.5% to administer these programs. And also, I'm being a little more informal today because it's a panel discussion, a little bit different. So I will recognize you, but you don't necessarily have to go through the chair with every question.
The expenditures that we show are the administrative costs for all of the legacy money, so our legacy money and the council money, the four councils money, the total appropriation of all the streams. And but it is just for managing the legacy fund appropriation. And the law said we were limited to 2.5% of administrative costs. So, we didn't feel we could come back and ask for more at that point, because that was in the legislation itself. So then that does come out of other sources, primarily the general funding that we receive from the National Endowment for the Humanities, or, earned income opportunities.
Well, let me just follow up on that first, please. No, you do it first.
Well, Ms. Mickelson, okay. Thank you for that clarification. And I understand that what the law says and that you shouldn't come back, but just notifying would have been giving us a red flag anyway, and so
point taken.
And that would have been helpful at that time rather than today.
Thank you. And so on the sheet here, $212,000 given to kids voting. Now, I mean, did you then track what their administrative cost was? Or how does that work? Or did you take care of their administrative cost?
Every one of these funding streams is slightly different. With MMB, there's actually three different or five different funding streams that are tracked. Our own money, the money for each of the four councils, and the money that was to be re-grants to the Civics Education Coalition. So the portion that goes to the Civics Education Coalition, which actually is three sub-entities, is we developed re-grant agreements with them. They laid out what their program of work and their costs would be. We got reports at the end of the first year of the funding, and then revised and new plans for the second year of the funding. And then, so the funding goes to them to execute their programs. Whereas with all the others, every expense runs through us.
Okay. Continue.
Thank you, Kathy. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I think we've kind of given you the basic outline of the size of the problem and the difficulty that we had in managing this. So unless there's questions, I don't have a lot more to present at this point. We tried to lay the chart out.
Okay. Mr. Chair, one more question.
Yes.
Of Mr. O'Fallon, then what, if you were given the same responsibility for the next biennium, mm-hmm. what amount of money would you say, instead of 2.5%, would you say 3.5% or 3 or 4? What percentage?
Representative Murphy, at the bottom of that second page, we make a suggestion that moving our administrative overhead up to 5% would just about help us address what we believe to be the size of the problem at this point. Others may have a different issue with that, but that was sort of the ballpark figure for us. So.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Jens, want to rejoin us?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I appreciate the chance to be here today, and I especially appreciate the variety of agencies that you have. I think you get a real different sense of how this is affecting each of us and how we're approaching the work. When Ms. Beach called me and invited me to be here, she said, talk about what's working, what isn't working, and any recommendations we might have for the latter. So I'd like to try to do that very briefly. And for those of you who were here 2 weeks ago when I did our agency overview, you'll remember that the Minnesota State Arts Board is a state agency. We are part of the executive branch, and we are the fiscal agent for 11 regional arts councils, 9 of whom are nonprofits, 11 of whom will be nonprofits as of July 1st. And so we have two different perspectives, and I'll try to quickly touch on both of those. What's working from the Arts Board's point of view about the administrative costs is, for the last 20 years, I went back and I looked at old appropriations language last night. For the last 20 years, we have, in each of the appropriations bills, had basically three lines. There is a line that says grants for regional arts councils, a line that says Arts Board grants, and a line that says operations and services. And the dollars that go on those three lines are determined through this conversation that happens at the legislature every 2 years, for this conversation about what are the needs and what kind of an allocation could come to us. Generally, through those 20 years, there's been very little language. There's been a great deal of flexibility that's been given to us. And so that's worked really well. It allows us to put the resources where we think they are best needed. The top two lines, the Regional Arts Council lines, the grants lines, we write checks and pass those dollars through. Every single one of those dollars goes out as a grant. to a nonprofit organization, to a community group, to an artist, to a school, to someone. The last line, the operations and services line, which in the legacy appropriations bill was called fiscal oversight and administration. It had a different tag on it, but it was basically the same line. That's every dollar that the Arts Board spends. So it's our staff time, it's our rent, it's our computer systems, it's the costs of administering all of those programs, it's technical assistance, it's just really everything that doesn't go out of the agency as a grant. And I looked back and compared two different periods of time. Between 1998 and 2003, pre-legacy funds was sort of the high water mark for the Arts Board. We were receiving a biennial appropriation of about $26 million for the two-year period, and the administrative costs at that time were 8%. That's what we were allowed to use. In 2003, when the state was facing a $4.6 billion projected deficit at the time, our agency budget was cut, the appropriation was cut, and the administrative lines were cut. And since then, we have been somewhere down around the 4 to 5% of administrative costs. So the what isn't working part about it was when that cut happened, there was a disproportionate cut. The overall appropriation was cut by a third, but the administrative line was cut by two-thirds, which made it very difficult to balance out the responsibilities that we had for managing those funds. So as a recommendation, if and when there are cuts, if increases and decreases are proportional, it really makes it much easier for us to do our jobs as well as we can. The other, and this isn't a what isn't working, this is more of a question that I think we're all wrestling with. The Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund was capped, the administrative costs were capped at 2.5%. The language of the Constitution says that the new funds must supplement, not substitute for, and so we have been very rigid about that, and we have been only paying for new costs out of the new dollars. The question becomes, what happens if general fund reductions happen? How do we interpret the Constitution, and how do we stay true to the Constitution and not use new monies to substitute for what has been an ongoing cost all along? So that's the Arts Board's point of view. From the Regional Arts Council's point of view, just a little bit of background. They are nonprofit organizations, and we look to the Charities Review Council for some guidance on this. Some of you may know that there's this organization in Minnesota that is the good housekeeping seal of approval, if you will, on nonprofits, and they have a set of accountability standards that they have established. And one that they have drawn is that at least 65% of a nonprofit's three-year average expenses should be used for direct programming. At least 65% should be used for programming. Their ideal range is somewhere in the 70 to 90%. So if you turn that around, according to the Charities Review Council, 10 to 30% could be a reasonable range for administrative costs. And they go on to say that a well-managed nonprofit strengthens its ability to further its mission over time by investing in its infrastructure. And if an organization is investing less than 10% of its costs in administration and infrastructure, that raises the red flag that maybe it is not able to provide the oversight that's necessary. And so one of the things, again, that has been working is that for 20 years, the legislature in those three appropriations lines has put a line for regional arts councils but has not provided further guidance about what proportion of that fund should be used for programs, for grants, for services, for administrative costs. Given the scope, the magnitude, the seriousness of the issues that the legislature deals with, that's been a decision that the legislature has delegated to the Arts Board. And we feel that it has worked well. The standard that we've set is higher than the Charities Review Council. We've said 15 to 20% administrative costs is as far as we would go. And the Regional Arts Councils are in a really difficult place because they are both nonprofit organizations delivering services, but they're also public agencies and have the same level of oversight and accountability that we have. They're service providers, but they're also funders. And so it's difficult for them to go out and raise other sources of funds because then they would be competing with their own constituents. So they walk in two worlds, and it's very difficult for them to do that. And so we have felt that the standard, that 15 to 20% standard, is reasonable, and We were pleased when the auditor's office looked at our books this past summer and noted that all of the regional arts councils are falling below that standard. They're meeting that. And so that part of it has been working well. So I guess that would be a recommendation as well, that if you can, to continue to delegate that negotiation and that conversation about how to invest dollars to the Arts Board and the Regional Arts Councils, we would appreciate that. And the last thing I will say is many people think of administrative costs as bureaucracy or as waste, but they really aren't. Administrative costs are what it costs us to do our business, to provide the services that Minnesotans demand, to provide the oversight that you expect, that taxpayers expect, and we believe that some investment in infrastructure is really important in order to be able to accomplish our mission and to provide those services.
Thank you, Ms. Jensen. 2.5% is what you had to administer the cost. What expenses? We're told $47,000 extra by the Humanities Council. Do you have an amount that above and beyond the 2.5% that you had to go into your other funds for?
Mr. Chair, we didn't. We had to live within our means, and we made choices about how to spend those dollars. Because we have a general fund appropriation that has administrative costs in it, and we had the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund dollars that had some administrative costs, we kept existing administrative costs in the general fund pool, and new costs related to our new programs and activities have been charged to the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. The two together, if you add our total aggregate budget together, the administrative costs that we have available for the board are about 4%. So we are about as lean as you can be and still provide a level of service that we try to provide.
Okay, thank you. We have a quorum now. Representative Torkelson, did you move the February 8th minutes?
I did move the minutes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are passed. Representative Mr. Strom, would you...
That was very pleasant for a second.
I thought it was a demotion. But.
quite the promotion. I just had a question with regard to clarification. You talked about the nonprofit council, I forget the name of it. In that 30 to 40% that they identify, that includes fundraising costs, which is quite substantial for some nonprofits, and clearly is not an issue with regard to getting the legacy fund. So do you have any breakdown of what is actual administration and what would be funds that they would assume would go to the fundraising?
Mr. Chair? I'll presume it's all right. Mr. Strom, you're absolutely right. The Charities Review Council includes fundraising and administrative costs in that 30 to 40% range. The purely administrative costs that we have been able to uncover based on conversations with the Charities Review Council and looking at GAAP and looking at some others are things like preparing an audit, preparing and filing the 990, the federal reporting. In our case, each of the Regional Arts Councils is expected to prepare and submit a biennial plan to collect public input on that plan and administer it. The costs of preparing their budgets, preparing board financial statements, again, that are in compliance with the GAAP standards. Any facilities costs that are non-program related, the water main breaks, and you've got to deal with those costs. And so in sort of general payroll, HR, those sorts of costs are what generally fall into the purely administrative line.
Do you know what percentage in a well-run nonprofit would go to something like fundraising?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Strom, I'm sorry, I don't know that. We didn't ask them specifically to break out fundraising, but you're absolutely right. With the Regional Arts Councils, the fundraising costs are small. They would relate to the funds that they receive from the McKnight Foundation. They're each asked to provide a proposal and to meet with the McKnight Foundation to generate those grants year after year. So there is a small amount of fundraising. We have a few of the councils that will ask for individual memberships or perhaps ask their county or city governments to make contributions. So some of them have small fundraising costs, but they are quite small.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Jens, I thank you for this clarification and the breakdown. What would have happened if you had passed down, like I thought you were going to do, if you had passed down the 2.5% limit to the Arts Councils?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, I don't know that the councils could provide the service that they do at that level of funding. Many of the councils up until the legislative, until the legacy funds were passed, some of them were one-person offices. And when you are that small, your fixed costs tend to be a higher percentage of your budget. 2.5% without any other sources to go to. I really don't know how they would continue to provide the service that they do.
And, Mr. Chair, Ms. Jens, then they would not have made their grants, and so that money would have stayed in the pot?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, if a regional arts council is not able to fulfill its responsibilities, there is a way for the board to step in and somehow be involved. It's not a situation we've ever done, nor is it a situation we want to do. We believe in local decision making. We believe in the power of those local boards and citizens making decisions. I suspect that if that were the case, that each of the councils would cut back to perhaps a staff person or a part-time staff person who would really have a difficult time turning those grant dollars around and providing the level of oversight, reading the financial reports and accounting to us and accounting to the IRS for the funds. I think it would be extremely difficult for them.
Did the Arts Board have a process for telling them what the 15% to 20% should be, or that they had to account for that?
Mm-hmm. Well, he's gone, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, we have a document that was developed with the Regional Arts Councils and Arts Board input. It was something that we worked on together and developed, and that's the place where we capture that 15 to 20% standard. It also outlines what kinds of costs go into program costs, what kind of costs go into administrative costs. It helps provide some guidance so we have consistency across the statewide system.
Did the Arts Council hire people? The Arts Councils hire individuals then?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, some of them did, yes.
How many jobs were created?
Mr. Chair, I'm looking at my Regional Arts Council counterpart. I think you said 15? 15 across the state.
Just hold up your fingers.
Some of those were full-time, some of those were part-time jobs.
One of our goals, Mr. Chair, of the committee in the past was economic development and jobs.
Certainly, and I've been stressing that too. I mean, one of the things that we can do, and why I think we should be, at least for now, dispersing money each year, is that it does result in jobs over the summer. And faster than a bonding bill. Not as much money is spent, but we can get jobs out in the field faster and have an impact. And that's why I think we should continue to operate the way we are with yearly dispersals of money.
I have one more. Ms. Jensen, the Art Councils, were they closer to the 15% or were they closer to the 20%?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, they were all under 15%.
They were all under 15%.
More in the 10 to 13%.
Thank you.
Representative Torkelson, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize for being late to the table, so if my question has already been asked and answered, please refer me to the tape. But I think my question is for Mr. Nobles. We talk about administrative costs always in terms of percentage. to me, that doesn't seem like it's always appropriate. It seems like, depending on the nature of the agency, the amount of funds they're dealing with, the size of the grants they make, that percentage is not really necessarily tell the story. Are there other methods for evaluating administrative costs and their appropriate levels?
Mr. Chairman, you get right to my point, and I guess I'm here to kind of clarify what our position was, and just so there's no misunderstanding, when we raised this issue in an audit report relative to the State Arts Board, we recognized that in the law, the legislature had used the approach of specifying a percent, not only for the Arts Board, but for many organizations. And so we raised the issue because when we came to the money that was being dispersed to the regional arts councils, there was no percentage specified, and we learned that, in fact, the regional arts councils were anticipating, planning to use significantly more money for administrative expense. They were quite open about that. They said in their plans. And so we simply raised it as an issue that we wanted brought back to the legislature, and thank you, Mr. Chairman, for having this hearing, because it's exactly the discussion we think needs to occur. So we were not being an advocate that you were applying the correct percent, or even that that was the appropriate approach, as you now, I think, raise a question. Is that the appropriate approach? It may be a false sense of precision in anticipating that an organization can keep its administrative costs to 3% or 3.5 or 2.5 or whatever the number is. So I think as we proceed in this conversation, I think we want to open the door to other approaches. And I think one is going to be presented to you, and I'm getting a little out of line here, but responding to your question, I think others would like to present to you some alternatives. But as long as I've got the floor.
Keep on, Mr. Roll.
You already have in law, actually, a somewhat different approach. In 2007, you passed a law related to grants administration. And the first provision in that law, and it's short, so I'll just read it to you, and I have copies if you'd like copies. It's Minnesota Statute 16B.98. It's, again, on grants management. And it says, as a condition of receiving a grant from an appropriation of state money, the recipient of the grant must agree to minimize administrative costs. The granting agency is responsible for negotiating appropriate limits to these costs so that the state derives the optimum benefit for the grant funding. So you already have in place, it seems to me, a mechanism that puts on the state agency, in most cases the granting agency, a responsibility to negotiate what is going to be covered in administrative costs. And that could be done in a variety of ways. It could be as a percent, it could be as a dollar amount, it could be specifying what can and cannot be used, money could be used for in terms of administrative expense. So it opens up the possibility that there would be variability depending on the nature of the activity that's being funded, the nature of the organization. And I think all of these things are going to come out as reasonable bases for variation. I think the real challenge for you is that you ultimately hold the purse strings over this money. And I think there is a great deal of added sensitivity to the legacy money. There's always sensitivity about all public money, but as I've said a number of times to this group, and it's not news to any of you, that there's added sensitivity and particularly sensitivity about making sure that this legacy money is used for programmatic purposes to have some impact on the wide range of things that people wanted to accomplish when they voted to add this tax. But again, I think we all know that achieving those programmatic objectives takes some administrative support. Now, you've started down the path of saying you want to control that administrative expense by putting in law a percent. And you've done it in pretty low levels, 3%, 5%, 2.5%. It's varied. So again, I think now's the opportunity for you to consider some different approaches. But again, to the challenge, are you going to trust DNR, BCA, the Arts Board, any of the agencies that are the grant-making organization? Are you going to trust them to negotiate what that amount is going to be and whatever approach they take? And undoubtedly, you're going to see then quite a bit of variation. And in some cases, you're going to see some larger amounts than maybe you have been comfortable with. Because when we looked at the law, what we said is, you're using small numbers here for administrative costs. And then when we looked at what the regional arts councils were going to spend, we said, wow, that's a lot more. Doesn't seem consistent with the thinking of the legislature on this question of administrative costs. So, again, the challenge. If you want to back off of that approach and take the approach that you have in law as a responsibility and letting the state agencies negotiate that amount, you're going to see probably numbers that are going to vary, and there are going to be amounts of money that are going to be significantly more than what you have been comfortable with at least putting in law. So, Mr. Chairman, sorry that was kind of a long-winded answer, but it was an opportunity I couldn't pass up.
Well, thank you, Mr. Nobles. And now that we've completed the panelists, if there's anyone else. I was coming back to you.
Mr. Chair, I would like a copy of what he was talking about.
Okay. Mr. Straczynski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a handout. Is there a page with it? Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for this this opportunity to discuss this particular issue. And I'm going to envision you, all of you, in the periodic costume. Actually, Representative Cornish is pretty close, because the first time this issue was discussed...
We're going back to Wyatt Earp?
1776. It goes back to when the federal government was first created. Administrative fees was part of contracts and a major part of discussions going back to that point, that period of time. I used Google to do my research the other night. I'm proud of myself. But I think it's really important. I think you've got the right idea. You're looking for transparency, and you're looking for accountability. Really important. And I bring to you a perspective that, number one, I spent a number of years in state government. In fact, I was involved in creating the original indirect cost and administrative fees back in the 70s. I've also have a perspective. I've with nonprofits, certainly, and I've also had the experience of owning a Chevrolet dealership, so I can tell you what it's like from the business perspective as well. These are different things to different people, and it's really important you understand and have a good grasp of it. So I'm going to talk to you about a little bit about the issue, and then I'm going to also suggest a proposed solution for you. It's really an important issue, and it means different things. Okay, administrative fees to a state agency is something different than it means to a grant recipient like public television. Okay, I mean, there are different functions performed here. And there can be a different accountability standards for that. I was concerned last year, maybe many of you remember, that about the limit of 2.5% for grant recipients like public television, that's who I speak for today, and the difficulty was to measure all of that, or that it was not enough money. So we do, like others, we get our money from other resources to pay for legacy programs. Frankly, in our case, it comes from viewers like you. Public television is you. We rely on contributions and things for all of that. But that being said, I think it's important. The handout I gave you is really items that are included in overhead. Okay, it's really simple or fundamental when it comes to public television, and I'm sure it is for a lot of other organizations. I've just listed the items on the first side of that page, items included in overhead. We track these items, okay? And on the back side is things that we do in public television when we put together production costs and cost of a camera We charge it on an hourly basis, and these are costs that are included in it. We assign a laborer to a particular project to do a legacy program. Our labor charges that are billed on an hourly basis to that program are included here. Mr. Chairman, this document and these items included have been vetted with the federal government. Public television has been receiving grants from the federal government for years. The federal government embarked a few years back on an aggressive program to establish an administrative fee or overhead cost as it relates to federal grants. We've been audited by the federal government. This has stood that test, so it's been vetted already in how they measure it.
Mr. Straczynski, does the federal government have an administrative cost level?
Mr. Chairman, they don't have a standard. It's based on individual needs and how it works individually. Let me give you an example for public television. We've got six stations serving the state of Minnesota. Transmitters are a real expensive operation. The electric bill alone is enormous when you're trying to power 1,100-foot tower with that transmitter, with that antenna on it. But that cost is the same in Bemidji, Minnesota, as it is in the Twin Cities, and yet TPT is a little bit larger organization. So that part of the electric cost, you know, is a higher number, and that's also part of the space and overhead costs that are included for an organization like Bemidji or Appleton or Austin, Minnesota. So there's some flexibility. And in my proposed solution, I'm going to give you an example of how to deal with those kinds of issues. So they haven't taken a flat rate. We've had contracts with the federal government where the administrative overhead allowable charges have been pre-approved, and part of our contracts were as much as 20%. I did a recent survey with our public television stations, and we asked them to track this information because we knew it was going to be an issue for us. And as you know, I came to you before session even talking about this is an issue for us, and we'd like to express our concerns, and hopefully we can find a remedy that will be beneficial, at least to us, to help cover some of our costs and continue to do the good things that we do with public television. As you know, we hired 37 people with legacy dollars last year. In public TV alone, we hired 37 people with the grant dollars, and I will be presenting to you at your next, whenever we're up in your budget again, what the total benefit, with the cost, the salaries, and the benefit package. I'm going to give you a real number that exists with those 37 people to put it in perspective for you at that time. But that's significant. And those 37 people brought additional costs to the facility. Like the list says, whether it was HR, space, all of those kinds of things, right down to the fax machine, copiers, computers, all, you know, I mean, a lot of additional costs go into hiring that many people. And so that's kind of the background. The 2.5% was a little tight. But, you know, looking at this from your perspective, and looking at this from the perspective, you want transparency and you want real accountability. And you don't want to totally let loose the reins, because I think that leads into problems. And if my statutory research or my research on administrative fees showed there's lots of litigation on this subject, believe me, over all the years, in the commercial sector, the nonprofit sector, and government sector. I think if you created a system that allowed some flexibility with the administrative fees, I'm going to suggest up to, in our case, 15%. And that might be a good number to use. I don't know how it works for other people. We tracked all of that. And I had numbers with our six stations ranging from 12.9 to about 18%. On our six public television stations, because we track that. It's in our audited financial statements. We track those numbers, so it's pretty easy for us. And I think at one time I had thought about maybe you should put something in the statute, something like this. But my concern is about doing that, is while that would definitely show your intent and provide for accountability, something's always off the list, or something should be included in the list, it's not there, or something's on the list, maybe it shouldn't be. I think you run into those kinds of problems over time. Now, as a lobbyist coming back year after year to fix all that, that's job development, more opportunity for me, of course. I think there's a more practical way to deal with that matter. I have great affinity and respect for the Department of Administration, as I told you at our last legacy hearing, and how they manage these contracts. We put together contracts. We negotiated the contracts very transparent, and we have very rigid standards and reportability requirements in the contracts. It seems to me if the legislature would adopt a policy of providing flexibility, let's say up to 15 or 35, whatever percentage would work, makes sense. I'm counting the 15 in our.
The 35 might be a little much.
But it doesn't mean that becomes the number, Mr. Chairman. I don't think that has to become the number. I think what you do is you take these kinds of items, make them part of the contract. Let us measure and track it so that when Mr. Nobles comes in to do the audit, he wants to know what's the policy on your overhead cost. Here's the policy on our overhead cost, and here's what's included. And certainly that's a number that can be reported. We track it. And it's something that would work for us, perhaps. At least then you've got a uniform, consistent policy handled at the administrative level where it should be, rather than trying to put everything into statute. And I think that'll provide you with the accountability you need to be responsive to the public's needs. People always have wanted to tighten down on administrative fees and overhead costs, and it was certainly an issue during the war years and government contracts and our building battleships. I mean, everybody's always been looking at that sort of thing. But there are legitimate concerns by being too restrictive. You're going to force people to do things you really don't want them to do either. They're going to start playing financial games with their numbers. Let's make it very honest, straightforward, transparent, and accountable. Make it part of the contract discussion so that it's measurable and reported to you. And that'll probably work for all grant recipients. And again, I'm giving you a perspective from a recipient of the funding, not as an agency administering the funding. Thank you, Peter.
Mr. Strong, you had a question.
I forget your name. Straczynski?
Bill's fine.
I have a question that arises from what you said, because you had very substantial hiring that came out of this, and it seems to me one of the things that could arise as a problem, because it is at least currently the policy to do these grants as one-year non-base appropriations, that you know, there are infrastructure costs here that could, and other kinds of costs that may or may not be recurring that could distort your operations. You know, a grant comes, to do a documentary. You hire lots of people. If you had to have a place to put them, you could wind up with a substantial one-time cost associated with that, and then it's no longer, it's not a recurring thing. Is that something that the legislature should concerned about, is actually distorting the way that at least certain grant recipients out there wind up doing what they do and building up costs for non-recurring money that could, in fact, have significant tails.
Mr. Chairman, any other questions of the committee? That's a good point. But I think that's how we measure it on an annual basis, and we deal with it in our audited financial statements. It does fluctuate from year to year, and that's why that up to number makes more sense to us, because some years it is going to be different. But at least, and it's very true. I mean, the more money you have available, then your fixed cost on your space stays the same. It gets divided different ways. But I'm talking to you this way, it now enables you to measure all of that and enables you to get a report on all of that. So as Mr. Nobles comes in to take a look at that station for that contract period.
Mr. Nobles, how do you think that would work?
Well, I think Mr. Trom raises a concern that we have had, too. And again, it goes back to the point that I think we're going to come back to a lot, and that is the variability of administrative costs related to the organization, the project. I mean, again, you may have some things that you fund on a programmatic basis that require expansion of space, hiring of additional people, a lot of things that could be considered administrative. Where do you load those costs on? Do you load it all in the first year and say, my gosh, administrative costs were 40%? Or do you amortize that if it is going to extend out over longer than a year? So there are a lot of complexities with that. And again, I just think although we certainly understand, and I would echo the points of Mr. Straczynski, that we understand your concern about holding down administrative costs and having as much money go into program as possible. But the dividing line between administration and program is sometimes quite variable and elusive. So it just adds to the complexity of what you're trying to accomplish. Let me just add a few more elements of complexity. And you heard this from the Arts Board and from the Humanities, I believe, as well, but I think it will be true almost across the board that many of the projects that you're funding with legacy money are going to have many other streams of money. And so you may say, well, for legacy money, you can only use 3% for administrative costs. But they may have other streams of money with other standards. And then when we as an audit organization go in and try to track just the legacy money to see if they kept to that percent, it's going to be rather challenging. So that's just another thing to keep in mind, that if we are going to try to have some standard for controlling administrative costs, are you going to apply that across all the streams of money that they receive from the public? They may, for example, in outdoors activities, be receiving money from game and fish money, LCCMR money, and other money, and you may have very different expectations and standards and provisions for how much you can spend for administration. So as a legislature, I would just say you need to kind of keep that in mind. One other thought that came to mind was that, you know, for the outdoor heritage, you have the Lessard Council, which my understanding, and I think representatives may be here from Lessard, but I think they do a lot of review of what they are going to recommend funding for and probably look in more detail because of that than maybe a legislative committee just meeting during the legislative session can do. So you then have to, for example, with arts, you have to depend on the Arts Council to do that individual review. And I think that's one way to do it. I mean, the other way to do it is for all four funds to have some mechanism comparable to the Lessard Council that is going to go in greater depth in examining exactly what are we paying for, and not only upfront review the plans, but do some follow-up work as well. I don't think we're going to be the only people involved in oversight and follow-up. I think Lessard is going to be doing that for outdoor heritage to some degree as well. Let me see if there's anything else I can say that will confuse the issue further. The one thing that is going to, I think, come up and needs emphasis again is, are you going to have a different expectation and standard for the state agency and the nonprofit? I think there's been some statements made here that I certainly can't dispute, that there may be a reasonable basis to allow the nonprofit organization to have a different percent for administrative expense. Again, might depend on the size of the organization, the nature of the program and activity you're trying to fund. There are just a lot of things that are variable, and so we always go back to the question that was asked earlier, is this the right approach, that should we continue with it, the percentage in law to control administrative expense?
Okay. Does anyone else wish to?
I'd like to just add, though, I think that's really important. I'm speaking on behalf of the grant recipient.
All right.
Okay.
Mr. Straczynski.
I think,
and if any others wish to, they can start preparing. Thank you.
We're speaking as a grant recipient. We have a little bit different perspective than an agency that's administering these kinds of funds. Again, so I want to thank you because this system has been vetted. It provides accountability and transparency. And it's a uniform policy. It can be within grants and handled by the administrative agency that's overseen.
Anyone else wish to testify or be in front of us? Anyone else have any other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
I think that we need more information. I think we need, like, the Department of Administration's position on having, whether we should have ceilings or up twos or what works, because they have greater experience.
Sure.
But I also think we should talk to Parks and Trails, and the folks on the Clean Water, and the Outdoor Heritage Council, or Outdoor Heritage Fund, and get some insight from them on what they think of administrative limits, so that we would have the total picture. And then maybe a couple more grant recipients and a couple more of the administrator types. So we have the whole continuum.
Mr. Chairman, could I...
Before we reach another another conclusion that doesn't work.
Right. Representative Murphy, we're still a ways from reaching a conclusion. I concur with your thoughts there. Was it Mr. Nobles?
Mr. Chairman, if I could just add one thing, and again, I think we all speak from various perspectives here, but I think maybe this one would apply to all of us. It certainly does from the audit perspective. In fact, it's what kind of got us here, I think. And that is, if you go down, if you stay with the percentage approach, then I think you need to always say in law what your intent is. If you have a lot of restrictions, you know, you appropriate, you know, $1 million here and you say only 2.5% for administrative costs, $5 million over there and say 3%, and then you appropriate, you know, another $1 million to somebody else and you're silent, you leave an ambiguity as to your intent. So if your intent is that for that appropriation, your silence means there should be no limit, say that. I mean, again, that's how we got here, is that you were very prescriptive in many, many places, and then you got to one part where you were silent, and our question as auditors was what is your intent? Is the money that the Arts Board extends out to the regional arts councils, does the restriction you put on them follow that money to the regional arts councils? You didn't say that. You were silent, and it raised an issue out of that ambiguity and silence for us, and we are trying to go out and be an agent of oversight and accountability for you and ensure that everybody throughout the chain of custody of this money is complying with what you say, and where you're silent on one thing but have been very prescriptive on others, it creates an ambiguity. And I think this is one of the things that Mr. Straczynski was saying too. If you were to take the approach of a list of do's and don'ts, and you have, say, a long list of you can spend money on these administrative things, but you leave something off and they spend it on that, then it raises the question, was that okay or not? And the more prescriptive you are, I think the more prescriptive you have to be. So, again, that's kind of what got us here, so just to keep that in mind.
Okay, thank you. You know, we may have to switch panels here.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Murphy.
We probably should also have a summary of the 2009 and the 2010 bills and the different amounts that we had or were allowing for various things. Or where we differed from 2.5%, and if we could have a little checklist of those so that we make sure we cover everything while we're going forward.
Thank you. That's a good idea, Representative Murphy. Could we get a summary, please, Mr. Soderberg? Thank you. Well, you know, we do have some other folks that Representative Murphy brings up would have some input as well. So, who do we have here? I'm sorry. We need my glasses. Sue Thornton, LCCMR, Bill Becker from Lassard Sams, and Julie Blackburn from Bowser. Come on down. Let's kind of do it the same way, if you would. And Representative Murphy, your suggestion on the Department of Administration is good, too. And I think we will, perhaps at the next meeting, have someone from the Department of Administration come in and give their perspective on this as well. Let's kind of do it the same way we just did. If you just take a few minutes each to tell us what your perspective is on the administrative fee, the administrative cost, and then we'll have questions. So would you please identify yourselves for the record, and then give us your perspective.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Susan Thornton. I'm the director of LCCMR, Legislative Citizen Commission of Minnesota Resources, your joint services commission that makes funding recommendations from the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. So that older sibling dedicated environmental fund in the Constitution. And this, your staff had asked that we be in the audience and be available for questions. So that's mostly what we prepared for. I would just offer a couple comments from what we heard, and there's different perspectives on, as Mr. Nobles talked about, what is meant by administration. We have a 4% cap on dollars available for administration of the LCCMR. That is in statute. There is not a specific percentage for the administration of the appropriations that are made from the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. But with that, and I think it also you need to look at what the, as was talked about by the earlier panel, what are the goals of the appropriation funding? And I would venture to say that the goals of funding a regional arts council, an organization, is different than some of the goals of the appropriations from the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund that are meant for projects. And so in our discussion with grant recipients, and I have a list that was spoken to, and I don't know if somebody is available here to pass out what we call eligible and ineligible expenses. And this list that if could be passed out, this is in our request for proposal that goes out for all proposers. This has been developed over time, which is a general guidance of do's and don'ts of what potentially is eligible for funding through projects. Now, that's not to say if something's on the eligible expense list that the commission in its review, in its proposal review, would say we think this is an appropriate expense from the funding or for this activity. But what we specifically state is that it needs to be direct to the project. And on the side that says ineligible expenses, I want to call your attention to this is included but not limited to the following. Again, it's reviewed on a case-by-case basis. It's not meant to be all-inclusive. There are some things in here that are part of just standard state contracting. But then there's a number of items that have been added over the years because the view of the commission in its review of proposals is that it's a project, so it's above and beyond a regular organization. The organization should come in what they call ready, willing, and able to be able to perform the proposal within that project. And so, for example, you'll notice that some of the ineligible costs include office rentals, overhead and indirect expenses, office maintenance, communication expenses, purchase of computers, certainly cost of doing business by an organization. But the goal, again, is that that organization come in equipped, ready to do the funding of the proposal that they're doing. So we also, what's not provided for is
say, the University of Minnesota overhead, Department of Natural Resources, Shared Services, those types of things. So very briefly, Mr. Chair, that's what I brought for you today.
Thank you. We'll just go in order across the table.
Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Julie Blackburn. I'm the Assistant Director for the Minnesota Board of Water and Soil Resources. I'm here speaking on behalf of the funds that we get from Outdoor Heritage, the Outdoor Heritage Fund, and Clean Water Fund, but only for our agency, not for others that receive funding. For the Clean Water Fund, we receive, in the appropriation language, we received 5% ourselves for administration, 5% for technical support and engineering. We have only used the 5% for administration as our costs for implementing that program. We didn't take the other 5%. As far as our grantees, the overwhelming majority of our funds that come to us from the Clean Water Fund actually are just passed through to other units of government. We allow them 5% for administration, and that is really all about managing that fund, working with the boards to approve the projects, doing the reporting, getting their website updated, doing the administrative function for implementing that grant, not for any of the grant project activities. So it's really kind of that paperwork administrative oversight of the grant program. Each of those grants have to be audited by their own auditor. So it's kind of to pay for those things, the paperwork, the contracts. So we have allow all of the project sponsors to take 5%. Not all of them do. Some of them do. We are allowed 5% to administer the Clean Water Fund ourselves. As far as the Outdoor Heritage Funds, those are for riparian buffers those are for the RIM WRP projects. That we have 10% for administration, but 5% is for really the engineering design of the wetland restorations. That we do use the 10%, and quite frankly, that's really tight. I mean, we have to go out and do surveys, designs, contracts, title insurance, work with the AG's office, do all different kinds of work with titles, real estate specialists, all different kinds of things like that. So the only way that we actually make that 10% work is because we have been receiving some funds from the NRCS in order to implement that program. But the real estate, the surveying, the engineering, the construction, all of that is included in our costs from that 10% from the Outdoor Heritage Fund. And I didn't bring anything with me, but I think as far as the eligible and not eligible costs for our grantees, they're probably very similar to LCCMR type guidance.
Thank you. Mr. Becker.
Mr. Chair, I'm Bill Becker. I'm the Executive Director of the Lassard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council. What I have to say will be very similar to what Ms. Thornton had to say. We've watched the LCCMR over the years and picked up the things that really work for us out of that particular system. And I think the most important thing to say to you all here today is that in our appropriation, in terms of the use of the money, we also have language indicating that we will pay for any expense that's direct to and necessary for the purposes of the appropriation and listed or shown in the accomplishment plan, which is approved by the Lassard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council. The accomplishment plan details the deliverables and also provides a two-digit budget breakdown of the expenses. So we know personnel, we know contracts, we know equipment and things of that sort. In fact, we have a special provision that any equipment, capital equipment over $10,000 has to be listed in detail and expressly approved by the council. Where does this get us? You've heard that Bowser has as much as 10% in one of their programs. To give you a little flavor of the different amounts of indirect or administrative costs that are involved, we as a council, to administer the council, are limited to 1% of the appropriations. We use about 4/10 to 5/10 of a percentage, 0.5%. We do have DNR as a fiscal agent. They're administering $44 million worth of pass-through appropriations. They get $175,000, a one-time payment for the full appropriation. That it has to last them throughout the 3 to 5 years of the availability of the appropriations. A little bit different sort of a program is the Conservation Partners Program. It's a re-granting program done by DNR. We put $5,629,000 in our recommendation coming forward to you. The administration on that is about 5.7% or $319,000, if I did my math right. If anybody's a math whiz and I did it wrong, please correct me. And that's a higher percentage because they are doing solicitation, field review of projects, vetting applications, inspecting proposals. They're actually doing the fiscal agent work on that program as well, and they're doing the proof of deliverable. So it's a cradle-to-grave sort of a process that they're dealing with. Last but not least, to complicate the picture, there is $170,000 that DNR charges us, $107,000 that DNR charges us for support services costs for approximately $28 million in direct appropriations to DNR. This $28 million is for programs that the department is spending out of itself. They're not re-granting or doing anything like that. And that's a fee that's charged for the shared services, such as human resources, MIS, OMBS. There are no commissioner's office expenses or anything of that sort in that fee. It's an auditable fee, and it is to the same standards of direct to and necessary for the purposes of each appropriation that's charged. So we expect, and what we have seen in the accomplishment plans, is that the programs that are field heavy, labor heavy, that sort of thing, like restoration and enhancement of wildlife management areas, will have a little bit higher support services cost than an acquisition program, which is a little bit cleaner in terms of hiring people and things of that sort. So if I had anything to say to the committee in terms of what I would do if I were in your situation, I would make sure that the appropriations had some form of the direct to and necessary for costs, so that there is at least a qualitative anchor to audit against. I think also, to the degree possible, that you can find representative for the legislature to go into detail and watch these programs and their spending in detail, I think it'll be to the good of the funds passed in the amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Becker, could somebody that receives money from the council for a project buy trucks? You talk about equipment, capital equipment.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Becker.
Representative Murphy, if council approved, they could buy trucks.
What guidelines? Does the council have guidelines then for things that they'll approve or things they won't? Or is that all on a project-by-project case?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, it is on a case-by-case basis. We had one applicant who wanted to buy trucks this last round. We identified that in their proposal. We talked with them, and instead of buying a truck, which could be used for other purposes, once the program was over, they agreed to to lease and paid the direct cost of leasing for the program that they were being funded for.
I think that was a good decision.
Anything else? Questions? Well, I really appreciate the panelists for coming in today. We will continue this discussion a little bit later. We'll have the Department of Administration come in. And we'll have Representative Murphy make a comment or ask a question.
Could we have a reaction from the first panel to what anything that was said by the second panel, if they have a reaction?
If anyone has a reaction that they feel that they would like to convey, you could do it today, or we will have, again, the Department of Administration as well later on. So if someone feels they need, they may come forward.
Mr. Chairman.
Seeing no one. Representative Murphy.
One of the things that's been going through my mind, based on things, various things that have been said and the different amounts, one of the things, like, if...
One thing we've learned is a real variety of amounts here.
Yeah. And seems to be a real variety of needs for different amounts.
Right.
And I'm wondering if we're establishing an amounts that can be spent, if that assists or curtails the possibility of people that wanted to bring forth an idea for something really wow or long term over a period of years. Does having these limits put our thumbs down to those kind of things, or does it say, oh, there's all kinds of possibilities? Because I'm still hopeful that there will be more than, at some point in time, there will be more than one time spending for something that's really spectacular.
Well, it's it will be part of the points you just brought up again are going to be, you know, part of the discussion we have in trying to figure this out. And this is one of our little sticking points that is going to require some more consideration and some more conversation.
I really appreciate that you started so soon in the session with this, because it is an issue that we have to grab up
right
hold of and have a solution for. Come to agreement on it. Yeah.
Thank you. We certainly do. And I guess once again, I thank everyone, the panelists, and beg the indulgence of some folks for being a little more informal today and permitting questions from the staff. Frankly, because Representative Murphy and I were alone as we started out today, and we felt lonely. So with that, well, King, this case is closed.